and welcome to the Send Mum Club podcast. I'm your host, Gemma, and this is a parenting podcast with a difference because it's all about children with Send. I hope you are having a fabulous Monday. Well, this is the day the podcast comes out, but you might not be listening on a Monday. So whatever day it is for you, I hope you're having a great one. I hope you had a lovely weekend or you're having a lovely week. I have been up the wall because we are about to go on holiday, and being self-employed, I don't know if any of you can relate, it's like I still have the same amount of work to do, just a week less to do it. So I am pulling long days, kind of not being the mum that I want to be at the minute because I'm just so busy, but I am extremely excited to just go away for a week in the sunshine and switch off. Except when we're away, it's going to be glorious here. And I know this sounds a bit mean, but when you go on holiday, you kind of want it to be rubbish weather at home, don't you? Anyway, I'll stop now. And I want to talk to you about this week's guest because it's somebody that I'm really excited about. So I have followed Lauren James on Instagram for a while. She has got a gorgeous daughter, Dottie, who has Down syndrome, which is how I came across her. Their account is Keeping Up With Dots. You might already follow her. If you don't, please do. Her account always makes me smile. And she's somebody that I've had on my wish list to get on the podcast for a while. I always enjoy talking to another mum of a child with Down syndrome because it's nice to talk to somebody who just gets it. I often find that our experiences, or certainly parts of our experience, the feelings and things are very similar. Obviously, every child is different and everybody's journey is different. And I think actually that's one of the nice things about this podcast, isn't it? Is that the diagnosis can be completely different, but the feelings and the journey are very similar a lot of the time. And I hope you're finding that. I hope you're enjoying these podcasts. And actually, welcome along if it's your first time listening. Maybe you're listening because you follow Lauren and this is your first experience of the podcast. So welcome and thank you for listening. It's a great episode, this. We talk about the journey to diagnosis, which actually wasn't completely linear for Lauren, which was an interesting conversation to have. You know, we obviously talk about all the feelings that that brought up. And one part of this chat that I had with Lauren, I really enjoyed because she's got a lot of children. Dottie is one of six. So she's got five siblings, massively varying in age. But it was interesting to talk to Lauren about her experience of talking to her other children about Dottie's Down syndrome and how they've handled that as a family. And it was actually good to get some advice from her because that's something that I think I need to think about a little bit more in terms of my older two. And then we also talk about the fact that Down syndrome isn't Dottie's only diagnosis. Something else came into play a little bit later on. Now, you can hear Lauren talking about that in this episode. And with that, let's get into it. Lauren, thank you for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm really excited to be on.
So I've been following you on Instagram for a while and I'm really looking forward to our chat because you are a fellow Down syndrome mum. But before we get started, I just want you to, and this might take a while, I want you to run through your children for me.
Oh, wow.
With ages.
Yeah, no problem. So Ellie's my oldest and she's 22. I've got Josh, who is 17, nearly 18. And I have Gracie, who is 10. Nancy's 9. And Dottie at 3. What day are we on? On Tuesday. She was 3 on Tuesday. And Edie will be 1 on Sunday.
Oh, amazing. So, I mean, people say to me, oh, you've got a big age gap. You've got all of the ages. You've literally got adults to babies there.
Yeah, I've spent all my life being a mum. I know you do anyway, regardless of what age I have a child, but yeah. So Ellie and Josh were our first children and we were done after them, one boy, one girl. And then all our friends about 7 years later started having their first babies. And I was like, oh, I want to do it all again. So we had Gracie, but I felt like she was on her own and with that big sort of gap.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I'm going to have another one, I need to do it. I just want to get it over with and just have another one quickly. So we had Nancy and then we were done. And then another 7 years later, Dottie surprised her. And then again, Edie's kind of for Dottie, really. And so she's got someone close in age with her. not the only reason, obviously, I've had Edie, but I think hopefully Edie will help Dottie's development as well, and having that sort of visual learning and so close to home to her as well. So yeah, they're all great. They're all brilliant.
I love the fact that you've been done twice. Oh, yeah. And now you've got six of them. That's exactly, you know, if I was younger, I would end up being you 100%. I'd just carry on going.
Yeah. So when after we had ED last year, I asked them to sterilise me whilst I was in surgery because I thought I'm never going to stop. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, obviously is coming to an age of where she might be thinking about starting the family in the next few years. So I thought, I can't be pregnant at the same time as my daughter. It's just...
No, but also she, you know, when it's like, it seems what you've just said is every 7 years. So when the little ones are a bit older, then you can have grandkids and it can fill that like broody baby itch for you, can't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So we are here, Lauren, predominantly to talk about Dottie, aren't we?
Yes.
So will you just run through, I guess, from the beginning, your diagnosis was postnatal, same as mine, wasn't it?
It was, yes, it was. And there was, I always say that is a postnatal diagnosis because that's when I was told of the news. However, there was a mention of a possibility of Down syndrome within the pregnancy. Okay. Around 27 weeks, I'd had a significant amount of bleeding from around 16 weeks on and off. And I was sent to fetal medicine for some more sort of detailed scans, and they could see that the placenta was completely covering my cervix, and they pushed in, but obviously that was the reason for the bleeding, which it was, but they needed to sort of make sure it was working properly and the pressures through the cord and stuff were right. So we went over to the specialists to see what was going on with that. And during that sort of appointment, and she had pulled my screening results off. She'd asked for them to be pulled off, and so she had a look at them, and kind of I knew something wasn't right by the way that they were sort of going about the appointment. And she said that the placenta wasn't working properly. However, when I didn't even realize this happened, so when your screening results go in on the NHS, you have a number come out of your chance, as we call it now, of a number, for instance. So mine was like 252. I don't know exactly, it was 200 and something. And then when my bloods went in, so they then put your blood sample in and the computer then generated 1 in 151. So that was literally 1 point, I think, off being difference between a high chance and a low chance. And
oh really?
Yeah, so I think if it's 150 or below, it's sort of, it's a high chance, and if it's anything above 150, it's low chance. So you've got to be somewhere on that line, haven't you, I suppose.
That's so interesting though, that there's, I'd never really, with all of my children it came back low, so I never really looked into what would be low and what would be high. But it seems weird that there's not kind of like a medium, maybe.
Yeah, like
you mean a low or high?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she did mention that, you know, there's a possibility this baby may have Down syndrome, which I think I reacted then as I did the same as when I was actually told as well. I was really upset and I was, you know, worried. She went on to say that she thought, in her opinion, that it was actually a placental issue as opposed to a genetic condition. However, I could have an amniocentesis to confirm, but that would only tell me during pregnancy, or basically, do you want to know now or would you rather wait to find out? She basically sort of gave me the impression that it makes no difference to the outcome and your baby will be your baby, you know. So, and that, looking back now, I'm so grateful that she responded in that way. However, when we did actually get Dottie's diagnosis at birth, I was that shocked, even though it had been mentioned, I was still that shocked that, you know, and later finding out, not that everyone's choices are different, and I don't actually think my choice would have been any different, but she didn't actually say that you can terminate a child with Down syndrome later than sort of your typical termination.
I think I'm right in saying you can terminate up until your due date.
It's terrible. It's awful. However, I am, when she was born, I was quite angry at that because I felt like it wasn't my decision. I felt like it'd been taken out of my hands, if that makes sense.
And I get that.
So I felt very sort of trapped, if you like. That really sounds really strange, but like just, I hadn't chose this. So I think I would have processed it differently had maybe I've known in pregnancy, but we chose not to have an amniocentesis just purely because the pregnancy was already vulnerable and was already bleeding. I was already told that, you know, probably had this baby early and she would need to go into sort of neonatal care. And so, and I kind of clung on to that comment of, I think it's a placental issue and I don't think it's probably a genetic condition. I feel bad now, obviously, saying that, but I clung on to that she didn't have Down syndrome as opposed to, there's a possibility.
Of course she will. It's a little bit similar to, when it was flagged to us by our midwife, the consultant that we saw and a couple of other doctors all kind of went, we don't think it is. And you do. You go, well, if they know what they're talking about, if they think that it probably isn't, you're obviously going to cling to that, aren't you?
You kind of, you hope that they don't. So although she was a postnatal diagnosis and I still reacted exactly the same, had that have not been mentioned to me and I'd had a plain sailing pregnancy, I think they reacted exactly the same. Even though it had been mentioned, it's just that I questioned that very early on. Obviously, literally after she was born, I asked them, you know, straight away. Well, actually, I asked Mark because I was in recovery and he'd been to see her already. And he'd asked the professionals, and when I say professionals, I think he'd asked a midwife that was in surgery if she had Down syndrome, and she said no, which was hard too. And I think her actual comment was, no, she's beautiful. He'd gone down to see her. And so I asked him as soon as I woke up, you know, does she have Down syndrome? And he said, no, I've asked. She doesn't. She's beautiful. And he showed me photos of her. And I remember saying to him, do you not think that she looks like she has Down syndrome? And he was like, no, not at all. She's just, you know. And of course, she was premature as well. She was 2 months early. I'd never experienced that before with any of my others. So I think premature babies do look, you know, a little bit underdeveloped maybe and different, to say a term baby. So I spent the first night believing that she didn't.
You made me well up then, because that must have been, again, all of these feelings are in the moment and very valid. And I just want to caveat everything by saying, in hindsight, of course you would feel different, but you must have felt so relieved hearing that.
I was relieved, and I slept well, as you do. So I just woke up the next morning and they said, do you want to get up and sort of go down and see her? Obviously I did. And we went down, I think it was about 9:30 in the morning, and she was in this tiny little incubator with like wires coming off her and oxygen, and it was hard because I'd never experienced that before alone, and I was just like holding her hands through the little hole in the incubator, and the doctors think they came around about 10, and there was a doctor and I think they're like a registrar type person, there's two of them, and they were really quiet and they were whispering. And I just felt something was really off. But my initial thought was actually, is she really sick? Because obviously I thought that she didn't have Down syndrome. So then I was thinking, well, why are they being quiet? And I actually asked them to not whisper and sort of like talk to me. And they're just responding. So they'll let me know their findings when they finish their examination. Of which she went round about everything that she was attached to, and then it wasn't getting to the point. So in the end I was just like, there's been a mention that you know, she may possibly have Down syndrome. Does she have Down syndrome? And she said, yeah, we believe that your baby does have Down syndrome. And I can't even explain to you the reaction. And I think for me, at the time, I wasn't bothered that we were in a room full of people. The ICU, our hospital that we were in, was literally the size of my bedroom. It was tiny. There was literally like 6 incubators in there, like 3 each side, but you literally could touch the next person. And I think after looking back, I was mortified that I reacted that way in front of so many of the parents. They must have thought that I've been told this most, I mean, to me, it was awful news, but, you know, this most awful news or unexpected news, she was a in front of people. And I just couldn't breathe. I was just like, I need to get out. I need to get out. We were going through about, I think, a 40-degree heat wave at the time as well. The year Dottie was born.
Not helpful.
You remember, I don't know when Leo was born, what month, but that summer of 22 was just ridiculously hot.
It was. Leo was born in the October, but yes, I was pregnant through that summer, and it was
like 40 degrees. It was something unreal.
Yes.
And there's no windows in there, no air. And I was just like, I need to get out. I need to get out. She did point out the little markers that she'd spotted, like her low tone, I think it was the more of her flat facial features around the eyes, and she mentioned like sandal gap toe and stuff as well, which at the time you're like, oh my gosh, she's got all these things that are like wrong with her, and she's not going to look typical. But now they're like my most favourite parts about her.
I haven't spoken to anyone about this before because I've spoken to my husband, obviously, but that was a big thing for me. And it makes me sound really shallow and like a horrible person. But the way that Leo was going to look was one of the main things that played on my mind at the beginning, really more than anything else.
Yeah, and I do agree.
I don't know why that came up for me, but it was exactly the same.
It's I think it's just... They're not knowing. I think one of my first comments to Mark was, I've never seen a Down syndrome child in our area, or I've never seen a Down syndrome child in a coffee shop or a supermarket, or and I have, because now I see them all the time. It's just that you don't take notice, because it's not something you're looking for, or they don't. I think what I'm trying to say is they don't stick out like sore thumbs. Like, you kind of think at the beginning they're going to look really different and my life's going to be different. How are they going? I think the hardest part of the Down syndrome for me is that every child with Down syndrome is different. So there's not a definitive what their outcome will be or how their life will look. But an interesting thing the doctor said to me just before we left special care with Dottie, I'd asked somebody to come and talk to me about what Down syndrome means and what she may, you know, what do I need to be looking out for, and you're just sort of like sending me home, and I have no information. And the hospital did send a doctor to come and talk to me, and he was lovely, and he did make a comment towards the end of our conversation, and he said, you know, you don't know the future of your existing children, you know, your other children, and the only difference is that you know that Dottie may or may not have these, you know, difficulties. And, you know, yes, she may be delayed, but you don't know to what extent. And she may not walk straight away. But no one can sort of say, I think with your other children and typical children, you kind of know that roughly around 1, they're going to walk. You know, roughly around 2, they'll be holding, you know, words and conversation and have a good understanding. But I think the not knowing is harder than actually knowing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, so many women that some I've spoken to on this podcast, some I haven't, they have noticed things with their children that have then led to a diagnosis, you know, when they're 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something could happen. Your child could be in an accident later on in life that could be a life-changing accident.
Yeah, 100%.
So all of those things could happen. But it's just when you get a postnatal diagnosis like Down syndrome, you're then kind of waiting, aren't you? You're watching for for everything, and you're waiting to go, but will they do this? But will they do that? But what if they don't? But what if they do? Where you're right with the typical children, with typical children, it just doesn't even cross your mind, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I think it was just such a shock, and not having that knowledge about Down syndrome, because I've never had to have the knowledge, and I feel a bit shallow for not actually having any knowledge, if that makes sense. I think.
No, I felt the same.
If it doesn't directly affect you, I'm very guilty of not really understanding. But now, obviously, I'm a much more understanding person with all aspects of children with SEN or, you know, diagnoses. And it's opened my eyes up to so much, much more. And I'm so much more knowledgeable, and, you know, you sort of teach yourself as well. But, you know, it's not the end of the world, like it kind of felt at the beginning. And, you know, she's great, and she only really needs to be loved and looked after and cared for.
So I have two older children that I obviously had to have that conversation with after Leo was born.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Now, we were in a slightly different situation because they are with their dad half the time, the older two. So me and Ben had a bit of time alone to process and work out how and when to tell them. And we were backwards and forwards to older Hay. So the children came and met Leo when he was born. He was born at home at 2:30 in the morning, and they came to meet him that afternoon, like the following afternoon.
Okay.
And then they stayed with their dad for a little bit because we were backwards and forwards to older Hay. Down syndrome had been mentioned. We'd had blood tests. We were waiting for results. I, to be honest, that time is very hazy for me. I can't remember exactly how often they were with us or not. But it did get to a point where we had to have that conversation. And I'm wondering how that went for you, because certainly your eldest daughter is a lot older than my son at the time, eldest, who was 15.
Yeah.
So, and you've got the little ones as well. So how did you navigate those conversations of explaining to the others about Dottie's Down syndrome?
So Ellie and Josh were old enough to be told sort of immediately. Ellie, she wouldn't say unfortunately, but I would say unfortunately, Ellie was on holiday when Dottie was born. And so I think that was hard for her. And being away and not being sort of here. She was due back within a few days. So Mark phoned Ellie and told Ellie. And then Mark went home to tell Josh pretty much within that sort of first couple of days. It might have been actually on the day that we were told. And Josh came with Mark to come and see me. And we had a little cry, and, you know, but he said it was like, I think his words were, it's okay, Mum. Like, and just give me a big hug. And you just can't speak for the upset, really. But he was good. Josh and Ellie were, I'm trying to think, she's 22, 23. So she was like 19, 20. So she's, you know, she fully understood what that meant. And I had been open with both Josh and Ellie during the pregnancy as well. So they did know about that appointment, where we were told there was a possibility. So I think for them, they were kind of a bit like us. It's a possibility. And so it could happen. And I think Josh found it difficult at school. He didn't tell anybody at school, like his friends and things like that. I think he was worried about how they would react, or more so that he was 15, so it's that horrible sort of teenage years where, you know, image matters, and people take the mickey out of you for, you know, having the long sandwich, let alone having sister with Down syndrome. Gracie and Nancy, we didn't tell straight away. I made the decision that I would tell them when they asked, because I felt for us that I wanted them to just enjoy her and not have the diagnosis overshadow like their bond and relationship with her. And so they were quite a bit younger. So obviously Nancy would have been 6 And Gracie would have been 7. So they're still quite little, really.
Yeah, and they're also not old enough to kind of notice any kind of different, you know, like the characteristics that we talked about earlier. No, they're not ever going to pick up on them, are they?
Anything. I think, so the daughter was born in July, and I think it was actually around the first World Down Syndrome Day. Just before that, Nancy, the youngest one out of the two of them, she came up to me and she said, "Mommy, does Dottie have abilities?" She said, "Abilities." And I said, I laughed a little bit and I said, "Do you mean disabilities?" And she said, "Yes, that's what I mean. Does Dottie have disabilities?"
So that would have been in the March?
Yeah, just before March. It was literally just before the World Down Syndrome Day, so early March time. So that it would have been, 8 months old. And I was just honest with them. And I'd already bought these, you know, the Abilities in Me books. I don't know if you've seen
them. Oh, no, I haven't seen them.
So they do like a children's book, and they do one specifically for Down syndrome. And they also do one specifically for siblings of children with disabilities. And it just explains
Do you know what? I love that. I'm going to need to look them up.
Yeah, I mean, it's called Abilities in Me, the books are. I think you can get them on like Amazon and stuff as well.
Yeah.
I ordered those in preparation. And it's just a really nice book. And it just explains very simply what Down syndrome is and what that sort of means. And it kind of highlights the differences. And then the sibling book is more to do with how they're superheroes and how they, you know, are amazing for caring and sort of being a brother or a sister to a child with a disability. So we went through the book anyway, explained the chromosomal difference and Dottie's differences. And I explained that, you know, she may need a little bit more help at school, you know, and a bit more help in general. But you know, she was just the same as you, and it makes no difference, you know, to you and Dottie and how you are with her. And I remember Nancy cried, but she cried because she might need extra help in school.
Oh.
I think because the kids look at that a little bit in schools as not a negative thing, but I think they're always sort of pushed to do really well, aren't they, in school? I think they must see it from their point of view as you're great if you're getting on okay.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're sort of taken out of class or need some early extra intervention or anything like that, it's seen as, Nancy saw it as a sad thing that she would need extra help. But I just reassured her that, you know, that it's fine. It doesn't matter. You know, she will be okay, and she will go to school like you, and, you know, she'll just be like you, but she's just a little bit different. And they accepted it great. In fact, now Gracie and Nancy, everywhere we go, it's, you know, this is my sister Dottie and she's got Down syndrome. It's the first thing they say.
So they're almost like proud of it.
Yeah, they are. They are really proud of her. And, you know, if she's doing anything new or she's progressing, they're always like, they're the first ones to be jumping up and down about that and celebrating her little milestones.
That's so nice.
So that's lovely, yeah.
Can I ask, because this is something that came up in one of our therapy sessions a while ago. Have you had conversations after that in terms of, so something that came up for us was, what would Leo's brother and sister say if somebody said something like mean or questioned them or said something to Leo when he's older? And it kind of made me realise that we had the initial conversation with Alfie and Millie. We told them. Alfie kind of, I don't want to say wasn't bothered in a bad way, just was like, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Millie was really upset because she didn't understand what it meant and she just wanted him to be okay. She wanted him to be healthy and there not to be anything that would, you know, anything wrong. So that was fine because you can go, no, you know, he's fine. He's going to be a little bit different and it might take him longer, like you said, to do things, but he is okay. He is healthy. He's fine. But beyond that and beyond, you know, if we're going for appointments at Alder Hey or things like that, that the children know about, we talk about it then, but we haven't really gone any deeper than that. I guess maybe because it hasn't come up. Have you?
Not really. I think they pick up on conversations sometimes, and they'll ask the odd questions. They haven't said that anyone's ever said anything negative to them, and I think they would if they had. I just try and explain as I go. So if we've got an appointment.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, like, you know, if we've got an appointment, a physio or speech and language or, you know, a cardiology checkup or whatever, I'll always talk to them, you know, or they'll ask, how did this appointment go? Because they ask me every morning, what are you doing today, Mum? Because it's like FOMO. We don't want to go to school. We want to stay at home with you. So they genuinely know what I'm up to during that day. So they will ask how appointments went and things like that. And I just, I'm really, I don't know if it's right or wrong, really, but I just speak to them like little adults. I just explain exactly how it is. I don't feel that we've been really lucky with Dottie that she's not got any major health concerns.
Yeah, same.
And I feel very lucky for that. There's nothing I need to go into that's too deep. I don't feel like they would understand or get upset by. Dottie's got sleep apnea. She's due for surgery next month. At Bowen Children's Hospital, so have her adenoids and tonsils out. And they're a little bit, I think any surgery for any child, no matter how small, big, it's, you know, it's worrying.
I think that things like that, because obviously I've spoken to women on this podcast, their children have had heart surgery are waiting for brain surgery. Like, they are huge, heavy operations. Yeah. But I do think it's all relative, because what you're talking about there is to a medical professional is a fairly routine operation,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And Leo has got upcoming surgery as well for undescended testicles, which again, to them, routine operation. However, to you as a mum, that's a general anaesthetic. It's waiting for your child to come round. It's, you know,
that's what I'm more worried about.
Yeah. And it's them saying, does anybody in your family, have they ever had an adverse reaction to general anaesthetics? Then immediately you go, well, no, but what if Leo does?
Yeah, it's, you know, exactly what I'm thinking.
And it is, although to everybody else, it's like, oh, well, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, in your situation, if that's the worst surgery your child has ever had, then you are going to panic, aren't you?
Yeah, of course.
And the fact that they're cutting them, that's never going to feel nice when it's your child, is it?
No. I'm more worried about the anaesthetic, to be honest. But
yeah.
But yeah, no, going back to the, I just openly talk to them as best I can about Dottie's appointments and where she's at. And obviously they're living it as well as we're living it. They'll be living it from a different perspective, obviously, but they probably get more of the fun parts and we get the worry and the appointments and the admin stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but life didn't stop like I thought it would. And I think when Dottie was born, I had this, and I still do to a certain extent, an absolutely overwhelming feeling of guilt on the other children. I felt like I put this on them, even though Dottie's diagnosis isn't anybody's fault.
No.
I felt like, you know, me and Mark have brought this child into the world. We've made her, and they've now got a sibling with, you know, with Down syndrome. And I think it's very hard to shake that feeling off, and I do still get that sometimes, feeling like they didn't, almost like they didn't ask for this, even though we didn't either. I just think I felt sorry for them when she was born. I felt sad for them that I'd got to sort of break that news to them.
Do you know what I think though? You know, you were saying that Dottie's Down syndrome has made you a better person, and it's made you more understanding, and it's made you educate yourself more. And I agree with that. I feel the same about myself, but I also think that about the siblings. I think it's going to make them better people and more understanding.
Oh, yeah. It has which already,
And I think that's like almost a gift that, you know, Dottie and Leo in this case have given their brothers and sisters, because they will understand that not everybody's the same, and hopefully embrace that not everybody's the same. And like when we went on holiday a couple of years ago, there was a little boy in the pool. He was probably, I'd say, 8 or 9. I can't remember who he was with, but with some kind of adult. And he had Down syndrome. And the second that she saw him, my Millie was straight over trying to play with him, trying to swim with him and make him laugh. And I thought, if Leo hadn't have been here, she wouldn't have done that.
No.
She'd have noticed him and probably said something to me, but I don't think that she'd have gone over.
No, and it's almost the fear of the unknown for kids, isn't it? They see something different and they're not quite sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's quite natural for kids to just get, they're so honest, aren't they? They're so, they just say it as it is. We had a situation like that recently. I took Gracie and Nancy to Butlins in Minehead. Gracie had a netball tournament there. And there was actually like a group of, in fact, I think all of them had Down syndrome, but they were adults, and they'd been on like a respite type holiday there.
Mm-hmm.
And straight away, like you just said, she went, Mom, they've all got Down syndrome, look, they're all like dotty, you know, and very excited about the fact that there's others with Down syndrome. And I think, they're much more accepting. Nancy, the younger one out of the two of them, she's actually, they have a child in their school who has significant sort of care needs and has, you know, and significance then. And she's a couple of years below Nancy, but Nancy spends, well, they've split it up now because they realise Nancy's doing it all the time, but Nancy spends every break time with that little girl and looks after her every break time. And she was doing it every lunchtime, but now they've picked a certain amount of children that want to help. So they have a certain days with her where they'll just sort of like, you know, spend their lunchtime or break time with her. And I just think I don't know if she would have done that prior to having Dotty.
That must make you feel so proud though.
Oh yeah, she's amazing. And Nancy's a really like loving and caring little mother. And she's so lovely and very, gets upset easily though. You know, if she feels hurt for because she cries for the people.
Bless her.
Yeah, she's very much like that. Less about,
going
yeah,
back
no.
to what you said though about the guilt, I think about that as Leo gets older, how it will impact Alfie and Millie. And I was thinking, and I'm actually going to try and do this, I'm going to try and find somebody to come on the podcast. Obviously, it's the Send Mum Club, but I was going to try and find an adult sibling of a child who has additional needs of some kind to come on, because I actually thought that that might be really helpful for mums of younger children who do have siblings, who have these concerns, to kind of hear from somebody what it was like growing up with a sibling with additional needs and some kind of send.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really good idea. And I have a friend of mine who I went to primary school with. That's the only person I ever knew Down syndrome was her younger brother, and she's like 40 now, and her brother's, don't quote me, but I think around 35 with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. She lives in Australia actually, but I still keep in touch with her parents and still meet up with them with Dotty now for a coffee and stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's been helpful for me as well to sort of, they're so much further ahead. Like, I know you get further ahead on sort of Instagram and stuff, and you can sort of, you know, connect with those that maybe have children 5 to maybe maximum 10 years older than your child. But to actually speak to parents of children that are now adults with Down syndrome, and that's been quite, I think I found it hard to start with when Dotty was small, but it's definitely nice to look at, and I think it just gives you that little bit of peace of mind that, you know, it doesn't actually doesn't necessarily mean it falls on them. And I think it's important as well that you feel guilty because you think you're putting it on them, but actually they will want to help their sibling. They love their sister or brother as much as any other brother or sister. So it's not necessarily a burden as such as you think it may be. I think they would want to do that. And I think it's good to try and look at it that way as opposed to sort of thinking, you know, they're going to grow up having to, you know, look after Dotty, or, you know, I think it's just, you've said it before as well, it's just too far ahead. I can't go that far because I think you end up getting a bit anxious and a bit mithered by it all.
100%.
And you can't, it's the same as a diagnosis, you can't see that far ahead. So there's no point in sort of worrying about it as such, because you don't know where, I don't know how independent Dottie will be as an adult, or how, you know, how much care she will need, if any. Some, you know, some Down syndrome adults live with very little care at all. And some are very, very independent, probably live completely independently, whereas you've got others that will need a significant amount. So I think no one knows that future until it arrives. So try not to worry too much about the future that far ahead anyway.
You'd kind of sent me some info on Dottie on an email before we recorded.
Yeah.
And Down syndrome isn't her only diagnosis, is it?
No. So we haven't had an official diagnosis of autism. So I'm always very wary that not to talk about it, because I do truly believe that she does have autism. We're just on the pathway and waiting an assessment. And I know that obviously those, you know, people with children with autism, you know, if you haven't got the diagnosis, I kind of feel like I'm not an expert on it, so I can't sort of explain it. And without that piece of paper saying, yes, you know, she has autism.
But you can explain your child though, can't you? Because yeah, regardless of, you know, whether somebody has said to you yes or no, like, you know her.
Yeah, I know her. So Dottie were very, very typically developed for the first 18 months. And she was a little bit delayed, but she was, you know, sitting up, and she was getting onto all fours. So crawling was on its way. It wasn't active, but it was on its way. She was showing a lot of progress with a physical side. And she always made eye contact. She was so smiley. You'd only have to look at her and she smiled. And she made eye contact, she engaged with play, she'd play your toys. She did all the typical things, just probably a little few months behind typical peers. We had mama and dada. I've got videos of Dottie saying mama and dada, not in context, but copying what you're saying. Just generally developing really, really well. And then at 18 months, she went into hospital with pneumonia. She stayed in hospital for 10 days on oxygen, and she was quite poorly. She was never intubated or anything like that, but, you know, she needed the support with the oxygen. And when we came out, she just was never the same again. And that sounds so strange, and I can't pinpoint exactly, but I just know that it was literally when she was home. And I think the physical I noticed first, and I just put it down to, you know, she can't be bothered. She's too tired. She's still recovering. You know, she's just had a really bad bout of pneumonia. And then we lost slightly eye contact, and she just looked like, I don't know, her eyes almost looked glazed. Like, it was just a different eye contact. There wasn't any really, and it's very fleeting. And she lost all of her words that she had learned, and she wouldn't engage in anything. Toys, she just threw them. She wouldn't hold on to anything, and it was quite quick, like really quick, from having those skills to using them. And after probably about a month maybe, I raised concerns with like her pediatrician and the health visitor, and they agreed that it's a regression, and the pediatrician agreed to run some tests just to make sure that nothing else was going on. She said it was around the right age-ish for sort of autism to sort of sow itself, if you like. But she ordered further microarray testing to check there's nothing else genetic going on. And she knew, well, we know obviously Dottie has Down syndrome, but she just wanted to check there was no other sort of chromosomal diagnosis there. And that was fine. And blood tests, urine tests, and they checked like her thyroid levels, kidney function. They literally did an absolute overhaul of everything that might be possibly causing some of her symptoms. And we had a sedated hearing test, because I've been told for well over a year that her hearing was terrible. And that came back, but her hearing's absolutely perfect. There's nothing wrong with the hearing at all. So the whole, when she stops sort of responding to her name, you are automatically feel like she can't hear, but obviously it's her hearing. Her eyes, you know, as far as we know so far, she may be slightly short-sighted, but nothing major going on with her eyes. They checked everything. We did an EEG, and so they did like a, I don't know if you call it a scanner, but it's not a scan of the brain. It's like electrode where they put the sticky pads on the head. And I think they look at the brain wave activity through about a half an hour test while she's asleep. That came back not alarming, but just a predisposition to epilepsy. So
Okay. What
that means is that it doesn't necessarily diagnose epilepsy because she's not ever had any symptoms of epilepsy, seizures or otherwise, but it's there. So it's a possibility that she may develop symptoms of epilepsy, but they won't do anything with that as just on the EEG alone like that. She would have to have, you know, symptoms with it. So that was the only thing really that came back not quite normal. No, so the paediatrician is basically the father for the assessment, but has said if we've literally tested for everything else and the only thing we're left with is autism, then obviously they'll look to diagnose that then. But I think just the autism itself, I think I got into that. I was just getting into the Down syndrome and like the acceptance and that actually this isn't that, you know, different to the others. And then it just literally like the regression has taken everything from her and the progression that she'd made, it's almost like we've gone backwards. And then the progression now is even slower, like it's tiny and bits of progression. So we have a little bit more eye contact, but it's seconds. It's not enough to sort of engage with her. So I feel like I had that grieving with the Down syndrome diagnosis and, you know, I'm not having the child, I thought this having and accepting the child that you have. And then I feel like I've had to go through that all again. But I find this even more worrying to a certain extent. And I just think because she's lost the communication and the interaction. And so it's very difficult she doesn't communicate in any way. So we sign to her regularly, just the basic signs. And she just doesn't copy anything. Well, so I don't know. I always assume that she understands. So always talk to her, always explain everything, even though she doesn't like respond. But I think the hardest part is when she's upset or dysregulated or, you know, and I can't get to what it is that she's upset about. I think that's probably the hardest. Normally you can a drink or, you know, nappy needs changing or she's hungry or she's tired or, you know, depending on the time of the day that it is. But there are times where I just like, I've tried everything and I just don't know what is the matter. I don't know what it is that she needs. And I think that's hard, having had the eye contact, the speech, and then it just going. And I've done a lot of research on autism and it does sound like autism. That I know some autistic children never gain those skills to start. And so that's where the alarms sort of go off. You know, they're not talking or, you know, they're not developing as typically they should. But for us, we had it and it's gone. And I kind of think it makes me believe that she wasn't born with it, if you know what I mean. Like, how can you just be so typical for a year and a half and then just lose all of it? I think for me, I'm okay if I've got an answer, if I know why it's happened, but obviously there just is no answers with that. It can be to a number of factors. It could have been that when we were in hospital, it was traumatic for her and that's triggered something, you know, being prodded and poked and oxygen and nebulizers and, you know, constant for 10 days. It could have been the actual hospital stay itself, not anything they've done, but just the environment that she was in at the time. And I did it, you go through everything, you know, she had the COVID vaccine, I let her have the MMR, you know, all these sort of things. Should I have let her, should I have looked into it more? Is it that have I done this to her? Like, boy, I never thought about anything like that with my others. So I just have done exactly what I've done with my other children, with Dottie. And would I rather she had autism, or would I rather she had measles, mumps or rubella? I'd rather she had autism. You know, I don't want her to be in any risk. It's just difficult because you don't compare as typical children. I think from pretty early on, you don't even, you know, they're going to be delayed. So it's almost like, it sounds really strange, but it's almost like the pressure's off. So when you have a typical child, it's always very, you know, well, they're not walking. Why are they not walking? You know, how's my friend's little girl who's 2 months younger doing that? And my child isn't. And you kind of get into that routine. But when you have the diagnosis of Down syndrome and you're told they'll be delayed, it kind of just takes that. Well, for me anyway, it just took that pressure off. It was like, she's not supposed to be doing it now. She's expected to be delayed. And it kind of made me able to enjoy her more. And not putting that pressure on, you know, her doing things at a certain age.
It's interesting because I completely agree with you about taking the pressure off. But I hadn't actually thought about it like that, because I'd always thought, well, he's my third. And well, I mean, you've got six. So, you know, with each one, you get less up the wall, like, oh my God, they should be doing this. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh God. Like my friend's child's like saying that they're potty trained when they're 4 months. And it's like, no, they're not. Stop. Like, we're not in competition with each other. It's fine. But I think the further down you go, the more children that you have, the less bothered is the wrong phrase, probably.
No,
but you know, with your first baby, you're probably not going to put them on a toilet floor and change them because there's nowhere else to do it. I was in the hairdressers with Leo yesterday and I was like, well, you're on the floor because there's nowhere else for me to do this. So that's fine. And then, you know, you just crack on and you're just less...
more laid back, aren't you?
100% you're more laid back. And I'd always put it down to that. But actually, maybe it is the fact that I know that he's delayed. So maybe it is more that the pressure's off.
Yeah, I think I'd stop comparing to typical children. But then you do kind of, not to an obsessive sort of state, but like you do kind of then, obviously, when you connect with people on social media with children with Down syndrome, a similar age to your child, you do then start a little bit comparing to other Down syndrome children.
I completely agree with you, yeah.
I'm not sort of comparing to typical children, however, this child with Down syndrome is walking at 2.5, 2. My child's 3 and she's not. Or, you know, the communication, the speech, it could be anything, but they're doing it and Dot is not doing it. And that's hard sometimes, but I try not to do that too much. But I think as the time's gone on and now she's just turned 3, I feel like the time goes so fast till the gap gets even bigger. Children that don't verbalize, they can sign or they can use other alternative communication methods, but Dottie just can't do any of it. So it's, and I don't know where to start. You try things and you almost try everything, and it's probably too much. You probably just need to stick to one thing. Signing has been consistent, and that's our one consistency. But I've tried sort of like picture boards, you know, that she can sort of pick or point. I just don't get anything from her, and that it's really hard. And it's just, I think it's that worry again of, you know, how is she going to progress, or how is it, you know, how is she going to sort of cope in education or day-to-day life if she can't, you know, my aspirations for Dottie really is just that she can sort of communicate her needs. You know, that's the minimum that I hope for. Yeah. for Dottie.
The way that you've just described it, I guess, is almost like starting from the beginning again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You mentioned acceptance. So I guess it's, like you said, you haven't got the answer yet.
No.
So I suppose until you have an official diagnosis, maybe that process of acceptance, I know for me, I wouldn't be able to start proper acceptance without it having a name or without knowing exactly what I was dealing with. In terms of day to day, and learning to communicate and how that's going to work for her, you have had to start from the beginning, haven't you? So I guess it would be hard to do any kind of comparison with another 3-year-old with any kind of additional need or, you know, delayed communication, because they've had it potentially, if they've always had that, then they're further along than you in a way. Do you know what I'm trying to say? I'm not explaining myself very eloquently there at all.
I completely agree. I think it's really, And like, you know, no child is the same with any diagnosis. That it will be different to the next person with autism. Or, and I think that's the problem. It's always if it is autism, if it is this, yeah. if it is that. I think I'm a Googler, and it doesn't negatively affect me. I would rather know everything, and then I'm prepared for the worst. That sounds sounds actually really negative, but it's not. It's just the way that I deal with it.
Yeah, and I can see how logically I can understand how that would make sense.
So I have Googled a lot about autism, and I've followed a lot of accounts that have got, you know, moms that have got children with autism, and there are a lot of similarities. So I'm pretty much certain that that's what has caused this regression. But of course, things like, you know, is it degenerative? Is it going to get worse? Will she ever go forwards rather than backwards? Although we have plateaued now, which is really good. So, you know, she's lost her skills, but then she's definitely a lot more mobile than she was at the end of the regression. And so she's bum shuffling now as opposed to just sitting. So she's definitely physically progressed. But it's very small. You know, it's just accepting that those progressions are very small. So eye contact is better. It's not great still, but it's better. She's a little bit more smiley. It's still quite difficult to get her to smile, but she's definitely more smiley than at one point. You just couldn't get her to smile at all. She's just quite fake. It's just fake and very a shell of herself is the only way I can sort of describe it. Like, she's there, but she's not there.
That must be really hard to wrap your head around the fact that you had those things and now you haven't. I wonder if maybe that might be more difficult than not having had them at all.
Yeah, I do think that sometimes. I think I'd have found it easier if she'd never spoke or never engaged or never gave eye contact, or, you know, I think because if you haven't had it, that then I think I've got those videos of her saying mama and dada, and I just think,
yeah,
if she didn't do it and she never does it again, at least I have those, I suppose. I know there's a lot of parents that have never heard their child speak. So I find it hard, but I try and flip it and think, well, you know, she said it and I've got it there in front of me. I can watch it. It's upsetting sometimes, but I'm glad that she did say the word so that I've got that, you know, sort of that memory of her. And I'm hopeful that, you know, going forwards, that she will regain those lost skills and she will eventually say a few words or find a way to communicate that we understand. Then, you know, hopefully, it's more because I want to make her life easier, not mine. I'll support her and love her whatever, you know, however going forward she either she verbal, non-verbal, she can walk, she can't walk. You know, we'll support her, whatever we, you know, we love her and we'll care for her, whatever. But I think just for to be able to open her doors up to other avenues, you know, like so her learning will be easier for her, and, you know, being in different environments will be easy for her. Well, not easy, but, you know, manageable, so she can have a quality of, you know, and experience those things that other children experience without it sort of affecting her at the moment. You know, she's not great in busy environments, and she's, again, gets very dysregulated, upset, and you can't sort of calm her down. It's trying to find, just taking her out of the situation, calming her back down, trying again, and it's very sort of repetitive like that. But, you know, she is who she is, and we love her for how she is regardless. I just find that the autism is so much harder than the Down syndrome. I find the Down syndrome is so much easier to come to terms with and live. Living with Down syndrome was pleasantly much easier than I'd very first imagined, whereas I find the autism, I do find it difficult. I don't know how to support her to get her to progress. It's like I've been a mum four times before us, and that, you know, they've all just, you take for granted what they all do very naturally and what they pick up so easily. Their brains are like sponges, and it's very plain sailing and very easy. And I think being a parent of a child with additional needs, and in particular autism in our case, is really difficult. And it's not even the professionals really can, they advise and I can give you techniques and stuff, but there's no magic wand, you know, there's no, we can, you know, speech and language are kind of looking for like, so how am I going to get her to talk then? No. And they can't, you know, it's not how it works. It's just about techniques and giving me advice to do stuff at home with her and things like that. But her advice for, say, speech and language is the same as it was when they very first saw her at about 1 year old, because we haven't gotten any further forward. So the advice is still the same, and it just feels very slow process. But I know that when she does hit milestones, however small they may be, that, you know, there'll be the feeling when she does do those things will be amazing. And I just think you have to have hope that, you know, that they will achieve the milestones. You know, that she will walk, she will talk. It's just going to be a significant amount of time later than when we expected. Well, I think I expected the delays. I'd got no problem with accepting the delays in development, you know, with global developmental delay, with Down syndrome, et cetera. But I was never prepared for a regression and to actually go backwards rather than forwards, and now having to sort of live at such slow pace and take it back to that tiny baby steps forward again. It's more how it makes me feel, I think. And I think that's also really good to remember, that I feel like this, but Dottie is, you know, she's happy, she's content, she's loved, she's healthy, she's oblivious to any of sort of the things that go with it. And so I think really all that matters is that she's loved and looked after, and, you know, she's having a great life. And regardless, I think it's more from a parent's point of view that we worry and feel a bit sad sometimes about, you know, the fact that she doesn't do this or doesn't do that. But certainly for me, I know she's happy and she's absolutely beautiful, and everybody around her loves her, friends, family, you know, we've got a lot of support. So everything will be okay. It's just when you haven't got the diagnosis, it's very difficult.
I always finish the podcast with the same two questions. The first of which is, what is the best piece of advice you've been given along the way?
Oh, wow. I'd say it's probably similar to everybody else's, is that don't look too far ahead. And I think it's your natural instinct to go a zillion years ahead and think, what will the future be like? I think it's really easy to say, because it's not that hard to, it's a whole lot harder to actually do, but try and live in the day if you can, and live day by day, and enjoy them. If you're a new parent to a child with Down syndrome or any diagnosis, just enjoy them, look after them like you would any other child, because that's all they need is, you know, love and care, and everything else can sort of worry about it when you get to it. Don't let that worry and consumption of that diagnosis sort of affect the way that you're missing out on the newborn bit. And that's one my one regret really was that I did so much worrying and crying, and, you know, I missed a little bit of the beginning with Dottie, and I think that's probably my biggest regret. So my best advice really would be, you know, don't look too far ahead and just enjoy them.
Yeah, I feel you there. And then, what do you wish you'd known at the beginning that you know now?
Oh, wow. I wish I'd have known that everything was going to be okay, and that I'm still happy and the kids are still happy, and I wish that I knew life grows on as such, and that, you know, the joy and the happiness that they bring to you, I think that for me is the thing that you need to hold on to. You know, it's not the diagnosis isn't doesn't define them. And, you know, everything will be okay.
Yep. I completely agree. I love watching the stuff that you're posting on Instagram about Dottie. She's just absolutely gorgeous. She always makes me smile every time she comes up. Where can people find you on socials?
So on Instagram, it's at Keeping Up With Dots, spelled with a Z on the end. And it's the same on TikTok. We don't do Facebook. I can't do Facebook as well.
No. I can't even do TikTok. So I'll put those social handles in the show notes. And also, I love that you were talking about those books earlier. So I'll find a link for the, you know, for the books for the siblings and explaining disabilities and stuff. I'll put the links for those in the show notes as well, because I think that those are potentially really helpful for people. I'd actually never heard of them. Lauren, I've loved chatting to you. Thank you so much.
No, it's been lovely. Thank you.
Oh, thank you again to Lauren. I always really enjoy catching up with another mum of a child with Down syndrome. And I don't know if Lauren could see on our call, because obviously we can see each other. You're just listening to it. But like, there was a few times there that really, it made me well up, and I was trying not to cry, because I think sometimes when someone's experienced something that's so similar to you, it just gets you, doesn't it? And it takes you back to that place, and you can just really empathize with what they're saying. And there was definitely a few moments there where I was trying to hold back the tears. And it's just nice to know that somebody else just gets it, isn't it? And I suppose that's the whole vibe of the podcast, isn't it? Is that you're listening to it, hopefully, and thinking, yeah, I felt that, or yes, this is exactly what I'm going through, even if the diagnosis or the wording isn't the same, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat together. So that, I really, really did enjoy that episode. And like I said, I will put Lauren's socials in the show notes. And those amazing books, how did I not know about them? I mean, to be fair, my two were probably a bit too old for those books that Lauren mentioned. But I think if you have a child with a disability or additional needs of any kind, and you do have siblings that those books would be age appropriate for, then that's absolutely perfect. So yeah, I'll hunt them down and I'll put a little link to Amazon or wherever in the show notes. So that's it for another week. Thank you so much for listening. I know I say it every week and it's probably boring, but if you could like follow and subscribe and all of that, and if you want to leave a nice review, if you'd like to leave a 5-star rating, I would really appreciate it. And I will see you back with another fabulous guest next week.